Hi, everybody. So I'm Vitalik, and this is my first ever podcast, episode number one. Really excited. And my guest today is Oksana Ivanova, who is my friend on Twitter. So we never met in person, but she sounds really sweet on the phone. So I figured that would be a good reason to record the podcast. So Oksana is a gamification UX person, as I would put it simply, and I will let her to tell us more about herself. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Yeah, as you said, I'm Oksana. Glad you decided to have me here because, actually you've never heard how I sound. But yeah, that's good. You decided to have me here anyway. You said that I'm a gamification person, and I wouldn't say that. It means that I have some elements of game in my personality, but I don't think so. I would say that I'm a complicated person because I'm interested in UX, gamification, and all this stuff that you can't really decide on in a normal corporate world where you have no role or, you know, you're kind of multiple hat guy. So that's actually what I do. And yeah, I would say that not a gamification person, complicated person. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so let me get this straight. If you cannot figure out what you're doing on the project, you just start playing games, right?
Yes. I guess if you're a gamification person, that's definitely what you do. You're saying that, oh, guys, no, it's too boring. I'm going to play some games. So,
okay.
It's fun again. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool. That should do it. All right. Well, I don't know anything. I mean, I scanned some articles to kind of, you know, quote unquote, prepare for this episode. So I don't sound, you know, too stupid. But tell us what gamification actually is. I hear it's some kind of a, you know, controversial word in terms of what that means, and maybe, you know, it should not be called gamification, but maybe game design is what I read in some places. But, you know, I could be 100% wrong. So why don't you being the you know, gamification person, as we titled you, why don't you tell us what gamification is?
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, that there is pretty much the same as game design, because gamification, as it's not even a subject that you can study, actually. It's just some sort of thing that you apply to very serious products or very serious events or very serious things that you're developing, for example, or whatever you're doing, and you're just occasionally adding some sort of nice stuff for people to feel engaged and interested in everything that you're trying to help them with. For example, I've been working with e-learning a lot, and I know that some people do really love adding that sort of points, badges, leaderboards, and they think that, you know, helping people to compete with each other is going to help them a lot. That's what actually came from gamification in the first place, that if people compete and if they get rewards for what they do, and if they just, you know, have some sort of stupid badges and they have some stupid things that they get for achieving first level, second level, I don't know, for sneezing, for everything they do, it's going to help them to learn things, to be more interested in the process, and to see how they're kind of, how they're good at what they do. But that's actually really tricky because it never works.
Okay, tell us more.
Especially when it comes to e-learning and knowing how many people actually drop out of courses and they never complete courses when they started, even though it's probably...
I think we lost you for a second.
All this interactive media. Yeah.
You disappeared for like, you know, 5 or 10 seconds. So if you don't mind repeating maybe the last couple of sentences.
in e-learning. It's really difficult to help people learn with gamification, you know, with rewarding them with badges and with all that stuff. So in the process of learning, it's a completely different environment from any sort of environments that you have to encounter every day. But I guess what I wanted to say that gamification is when you are trying to make things engaging in the first place. It doesn't mean that it's fun. I know that people usually say it's fun because it's about games, but it's actually about engagement. So if you're adding some sort of rewards or feedback, it's actually already you using gamification in a sort, in a sense, because people need to hear some feedback. They don't need constant feedback on everything they do, on every part of their, you know, of the word, of their click of the mouse. They don't need that. But they need some sort of guidance for what they're doing, and they need to know that they're doing it right. This is where you can apply some sort of gamified feedback for that. That when it comes to e-learning, in my case. And I think that gamification is not always about fun, but about engagement. That would be the right explanation for that.
Okay. Makes sense. That was a really good way to explain that. So I like to, you know, learn concepts not only by understanding what they are, but also understanding what they are not. So gamification, if I understand correctly, is not design of like video games. It's actually adding elements of games to like real normal products, not like video or, you know, desktop games or something like that, correct?
You can apply some elements of games. You know, game design, it's kind of when you're creating a game. Gamification is when you're trying to make some product or some sort of course or thing more engaging for people by just adding some elements that are pleasant and fun and looks like fun, you know, looks like a game, but it's actually not. So here is the difference. Game design is about...
And you can also gamify a game, right? Because if you play in a video game, you can add, you know, those badges and rewards, which would be the, I mean, as silly as it sounds, but it would be gamification of a game. Would that be a, you know, correct statement, or at least somewhat correct?
I would say that gamification, it comes from game design. You know, what you're talking about, it's there are elements of games, different sort of games, you know, points, badges, you know, things, elements, you know, trophies, all that stuff. It's all about games, leaderboards. It's all about games. That's what it related to games. The concept of game is about that stuff. And gamification is just, you know, you're just picking some cherry picking, I would say. You're just taking some elements from games and adding them to the real world, to the environment where you're doing something. But it's not a game.
Okay. That actually reminded me of TripAdvisor when I signed up. I mean, I probably signed up for it a long time ago. But I became pretty active once I started traveling a lot. And the first couple of times that I left reviews for some places, I received a notification, like an email, hey, you just unlocked your badge XYZ, and now you are expert, you know, level 10 or level 1, whatever that was. The scale, you know, add two more reviews of hotels or whatever, and you will get to the next level. And that's how they actually sucked me in. And I kind of analyzed that a little bit. I mean, I know that people will do everything they can to make you feel, you know, special and through this type of gamification. But it's still, as much as I kind of mentally resisted that thing, they still hooked me up, and I added like a gazillion more reviews. And actually, I, you know, had fun adding those reviews because I like doing that. And eventually I became like the review, like in the top 2% in Minneapolis of reviewers. Like, you know, so, and I'm probably still hovering around, you know, 3 or 4%, top 3 or 4%, but that's how they hooked me up. And I would assume that's a good example of gamification, right?
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I guess there are many companies that currently using that sort of implementing gamification for their products. Not all of the examples that are good, but usually when it's done wisely, when it's done with a purpose and with a reason, it's usually good. And this example that you're talking about, it's exactly one sort of, you know, you're not really competing with others. You see, there is no leaderboards or anything, but there is some sort of competition with yourself, I guess, where you can understand what kind of levels you can unlock, and you're kind of excited. What's next? So it's kind of cool. Yeah, I agree.
And I think you just brought up a really cool, very actually deep point. But by saying that you are not competing with other people, because I would assume that, kind of like, you know, just real-time analysis based on what you said, it's not like something that I you know, thought about that yesterday or 2 months ago. It's just real-time thoughts at this very moment. My guess is that by eliminating competition with others, you are basically just, you know, removing a lot of stress from the user, because it's just much easier now that I'm thinking about it. It's just much easier to I can, you know, add two more reviews to jump on another level. But if I saw that, you know, there's 1,000 people in Minneapolis who are competing for the same spot or already at that level, it would make me feel pretty, not humiliated, kind of, you know, they are already there. There's like 1,000 of them. If I add two more reviews, I still don't have a chance. I probably need to add, 1,000 more reviews to get at least to the last one of them, to catch up with them. Do you have any opinion on that? Because I think that's a pretty interesting strategy in terms of psychology, right? To eliminate that competition leaderboard with others.
I would say it depends. It depends on the person, because I can say what.
Probably on the product as well, right? Some products.
What I gathered from what you said is, like, you're not a competitive type. So you are not excited when you see, I don't know, 999.99999 points at some person on the first place who is wearing a crown, you know, like digital crown, and he's the number one, and you're not thinking that, damn, I want to beat that guy, I'm going to beat him and I'm going to be on the top. So for some people, it's kind of a really good thing to compete for, just, you know, for the reason of competition, I guess. And this is where leaderboards come handy, I'd say. But yeah, depending on the product and depending on the audience you're trying to reach, it's really good to think what sort of competition. I said that it's competition with yourself, but it's not really true, I guess, because you're not really competing with yourself. You're just like exploring things. You know, you're exploring, and even though you see the progress, you see that you're moving somewhere, you're not trying to beat anyone. You're not trying to beat anything except unlocking some sort of milestones that you can do that in your own pace. There is no need to rush for that, I'd say. But that depends on a person, as I said before. So depending on what type of people you want to reach, some people that are really competitive, some are not, so it depends.
Mm-hmm. And it also starts with the product, right? Because, like, for example, with TripAdvisor, they probably picked a good strategy that they don't care, I would assume, who gets engaged into their platform, whether it's a competitive person or the other person. They just chose that approach where, you know, they're not going to show any leaderboards or people. They would just tell you, you know, like, you're in the top 10% or, you can leave two more reviews for hotels to become the level four hotel expert. They don't tell you how many reviews you need to get from top 4% to top 3%, but they give you those real kind of material that you can, you know, almost touch, you know, quote unquote, milestones. Okay. And I think when you said that I don't sound like I'm a competitive person, you know, I don't know. I never thought about that. But I normally don't really engage in games where there's a competition. I like playing my own games and becoming really good at it. So, for example, you know, if I'm doing some investing and I'm investing in a certain security, I really don't care how many people also bought that security, what price they paid when they sold, and who, how many people made more money on that trade than I did. I just, you know, have my, I'm playing my own game. You know, I said, you know, I'm going to buy it at this price point, I'm going to sell it to that price point, and I'm going to secure the profit of X. So, but at the same time, I like playing basketball, right? It's a competitive game, so you need to beat the other team in points. So, yeah, it's an interesting topic. So let's move on. So I assume you did work on some gamification projects, right? Did you notice anything different about the team skills, the team dynamics that would be happening in projects with gamification versus just, you know, regular software development projects?
Well, I wouldn't say that there is a big difference, because the one project that we wanted to create, it actually was an Estonian startup, Gamealize. It started with one of the founders. She's kind of a friend of mine, and she said that I really want to create a game, and that's how it started. And eventually, it just grew to some sort of product, you know, digital product, where we have tests, where we have actually nothing at the moment related to games. There is narrative, yeah, there is illustrations, but there is no game per se. But there are some elements of engagement, as I said, so it's kind of a gamification project, I would say. This is where I started in the first place, implementing gamification in a sense. And can I say that there is a big difference from the different project that I'm currently also working on? It's a campus. It's an e-learning environment. It's also a startup, but the American one. Yes, the US guys, well, they're kind of, yeah, probably, they're kind of serious guys, and they want to have as many features as possible, but once in a while, some of them could say that, how about we will make that a bit fun? Mm-hmm. And this is, everyone is just like, let's add some, you know, games there. So, you know, there is a learning environment. There is, just to explain what I'm talking about, there is some sort of an area for students to complete courses and to pick courses and chat with their peers and chat with their professors. And suddenly, there is some sort of game in the middle of that, you know, you just the screen flashes and you have a game. So that's how you decide to entertain people, I guess, in this case. But
did you guys?
Go
ahead, finish. I'll ask the question.
Ask me.
Did you finish this project? Is this product live?
Compass? No. It's currently under development because we have two teams.
You've been playing too many games.
Yeah, we have two teams, and one of them is just really, they're drowning in research that they're doing, and they're kind of getting more and more data than they can handle, actually. But, well, mm-hmm. I guess that's fine. We'll get somewhere from here. And there is another part. We have lots of wireframes, you know, wireframe, another wireframe, another research, another research, another wireframe. And suddenly someone says, probably we should make it fun.
More fun than it already is, right?
We probably have to do that somehow. So it's kind of in an early stage of development, I'd say. So I don't think that we're going to implement any sort of gamification at that moment, at the moment that we have it right now. But, I don't think, as you can see, that sometimes, even with serious teams, even with the guys who are really serious and would say that they never played a game in their lives, they would say that, oh, probably we need to add some fun to our product, or probably we need to do something to make it more interesting for others. It's probably the internal desire, and it's usually from marketing, not really from developers. Developers usually don't care. And marketing would come to you and say, we want it to be more, you know, fun, engaging, and, you know, good. We want it to be appealing to people. So what can we do? How about a few games? Can we implement a few games, or at least game elements, for this product to be just like on the top of everything? So that's how it usually. I don't know why, but marketing thinks that if you implement game elements to some sort of product, you're going to win. But that's marketing.
So first of all, let me tell you this from my experience, and it has been confirmed. Pretty much every project that I worked on, marketing is one of the biggest problems for software development, especially when they feel pretty empowered, and especially when they actually have that power. So in some organizations, you can tell them to basically, you know, get lost, and that would do it. But in some org structures, they just hold a lot of power. And if they tell you that they want a certain feature or a certain text on the screen, you don't really have a lot of choice but to comply with that. And I try to stay away from those projects. You know, in some cases, I thought I, you know, stayed away from this project, but then marketing just showed up with all the power they had, which I didn't think they did. So, but yeah, marketing pushes a lot of stuff that more than half of the time conflicts with pretty straightforward and simple user experience design. And as I said, based on the organization, most of the time, which is unfortunate, they have way too much power to control certain elements of the software product. And it's a pretty stressful game to see, you know, who can win this battle, whether, you know, to add this element or to not. So that's actually a great point. Let me ask you this. In this particular project, I understand that most of gamification proposals came from marketing or from like product owner, or who was the source of that proposal?
Yeah, you're right. It's usually from marketing or from product owner, and it's usually, I have to admit that startups, they any sort of startups, and usually when it's a some sort of new website like TripAdvisor or some sort of you know, e-commerce, they do really love that a lot. And when you talk to people who are in charge of these e-commerce websites or, you know, review websites, they kind of insist sometimes on implementing gamification no matter what. And even if you say that it's probably not a good idea, you're going to just, you know, lose lots of money on developing that stuff that's not really useful, that nobody's actually, it's not helping, not to your conversion, not any, it's not helping at all. It's just like a feature, just you think you want to add it, but it's actually quite useless. You can just live without that. But, you know, when people hear a buzzword, they want to have it, you know. So sometimes it's true. Owners and marketing, yeah, they kind of have to be, you know, on top. They kind of have to have the hunch for something new, for something that's really good, and they think it's going to be popular in, I don't know, 5-10 years, even though gamification is not that hot at the moment. It's kind of fading a bit, but still, it's kind of still on the top, on the priority list. You know, if you're not doing gamification, you're probably a loser. Sometimes you can hear something like that, so it's kind of it's tricky.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, whatever the latest and greatest is, there are certain people in every organization that would just say, oh, you know, we have to have it because, you know, it's out there and it's very popular. So if we release a product without this feature, people will say that, you know, we are behind everybody else and we are like dinosaurs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And speaking of marketing, I mean, I can record like an entire episode just to kind of explore that topic about how what the role of marketing actually, you know, should be, mm-hmm. not like limited to, but what it actually should be. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll ask my Twitter community on who would be the good person to actually discuss that. But yeah, that's actually a really cool point that you brought up, that marketing is a problem.
Problem, but yeah, they're kind of too pushy sometimes. Sometimes, I don't know, maybe in some companies, marketing teams, they're just like, you know, nice and kind and fluffy, like puppies. I don't know. It depends, because in my experience, when I was a product manager, I had to work closely with marketing, and even though they were like really nice guys, if they needed some features, if they needed some stuff, so if they usually told me that we are not making a product for people, we are making it for sales. So
mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Guys, but are you aware that you kind of sell this stuff to people? But well, whatever. They have their way in the market, so they're marketing, you know, so no pun intended.
Well, yeah, as I said, this is a really, really deep topic, and I'm glad we discussed that, because, yeah, I mean, just by the definition of marketing, you are marketing a product. You are not designing a product. You are not. Obviously, you know, all the ideas are welcome, but that's where we need to talk about clear roles and responsibilities and end-to-end ownership and final authority. In terms of, if you're a product manager, then you work in a cross-functional organization. You work with marketing, with sales, with developers, with product owner, and you know, a lot more other people in the organization. But you should have the executive power to make all final decisions on the product. So marketing can work with you, and they should market, you know, no pun intended, they should market their ideas to you to try to sell it to you, but you are still the ultimate decision maker on whether certain things will appear on the product or not. And you know, that's why hiring really, really solid product managers is very important, because that person has to have experience and knowledge to in building really great products, and not allow other people in the organization, like marketing, control their agenda and control their product. So all ideas welcome, but product manager should be the ultimate In my opinion, I could be wrong, but that's what I religiously believe in. That person should be should have the final sign off on any decision on any investment and the feature in the product. So, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or if you agree or disagree.
Well, that's a very good point, and I like that. But you know, in my case, is really funny, probably because I'm a gamification person, I guess. And in my case, I was just a consultant from the very beginning.
Right.
And it's a very specific company, and there is a very specific sort of software that I was consulting them about, and it's for libraries, and there is really difficult terminology sometimes for that stuff. And I was just a consultant, and eventually, after 2 months of my beautiful work, I guess, they said, how about you're going to be a product owner, product manager, project manager, and maybe something else. And you also have to work with marketing on that. And so, yeah, also I was a Q&A engineer and, you know, all this stuff, everything came my way. So I was like, oh, good, nice. I like that. I wouldn't expect anything like that before. But, you know, that's how it happened in my case. I don't know how it usually happens, but when I see sometimes what kind of requirements companies and people have for product managers on some job boards, you know, it's really like a multiple head guy who needs to do everything at the same time, and I think it's like a trend, or I don't know, it's a very sick trend, but it is. It's the same for UX designers, but product managers as well. It's so undefined. It's so fragile, I would even say, because you can't even say what you're doing exactly, because you're everything. You should know everything. You are responsible for everything. You're responsible for the outcome. You're responsible for the feedback that you know, your customers give you. And eventually, you're just like, you have no power over everything that you have. You just have to consult with everyone. Just you're consulting with other people. You're not managing anything. You're just consulting with them.
I've been there many times. I've been in environments where I had pretty much full authority, and I have been a consultant. And the difference is pretty much like night and day. There were projects where I would come in and I would just have a very clear condition. I'll say, I'll take this project only if I am guaranteed the full authority. I will not be, dominated by marketing or developers in terms of what they want on the product. I will control the product, including the UI, the information architecture, the logic, end to end. Obviously, you know, I will listen to everybody and collaborate, but I will be the one who will sign off on every single executive decision. Some projects allowed me to do that. Some did not. Those that did not, I walked away from most of them because I just didn't want to put myself through, you know, the stress of not having a rewarding experience of working on a project. But yeah, it's politics. It's lack of focus. It exposes all of those elements of organizations that should not be there, and that's why most organizations, they just drown in their own mess without clear roles, responsibilities, and all those ideas that pop up from all other places, and projects get delayed and over the budget, and you know, we all know how that works. One more question. I think we will be wrapping up pretty soon. That's been a really great discussion, and I'm sure we'll have more episodes, because you do touch upon really good points. One last thing that I'll ask you. You mentioned the word terminology, and you know, it has a lot to do with taxonomy, and I know that you are you have education in information science, and when I, you know, quickly asked you on Twitter, you said you know a thing or two about taxonomy. And I mean, I'm familiar with that as well. I actually have a lot of respect for that science, and it's probably one of the most underestimated things on Earth. People just, you know, half of them don't understand what that is. The other half kind of understand, but they think it's not important. But then they get lost in all those, you know, folders and directories and terms and drop-down menus. They don't understand, you know, what should go where. What's your opinion on how people treat taxonomy these days, and how they should be treating it?
Well, yeah, I have some sort of background, educational background in information science. So, yeah, guilty as charged. But taxonomy, it's kind of the thing that comes all the way around, you know. Instead of taking complicated topics and, you know, separating them and dividing them into simple things, it's doing just the opposite thing. It's just taking some sort of simple topic and making it more and more complicated and more points added to something that you wouldn't expect to find there eventually. I'd say that probably too many levels in division, it's really frustrating, because and especially since we have that sort of desire and passion for simple designs and so simple intuitive software, I don't think that there is a need to make it too complicated by adding that sort of division. It shouldn't be a first priority, I'd say. If there is a way to avoid that, avoid taxonomy in everything that you're doing, that's probably the way to do, because there is no, even though you're saying that's something that you're fascinated with, but it's not much of a great value in here. It is if it's something really complicated and if it's something really specific, you know. In some cases, when people do really need that division, do really need to go that deep in their research or whatever they're doing, for example, this way taxonomy would help a lot. But when it comes to just everyday basis, when people have to use that on a daily basis, you know, I don't think that's a good way to approach that. I don't think that there is, I would say, especially, again, so it's a very special thing, just as the software I was consulting for. That's a very special environment. That's a very special area. That's a very special experts there. So they have their own vision of what they want to happen, what they want to see for this software. And for my case, you know, taxonomy, it was really important because it was the essence of the profession. For librarians, they kind of need that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But for others, I don't think that it's necessary unless it's something really complicated, maybe science, you know, medicine, you know, biology. If there is something related to what people should study and learn and, you know, learn thoroughly, yeah, obviously taxonomy is just essential. But other than that, I don't think that's really, really, really important.
I understand it depends on the project. You know, it can be kind of like, you know, analysis paralysis or, you know, over engineering things, right? When like if you're building a simple website and you have menus, you know, about us, services, contact us. I mean, there's really not a lot of taxonomy application. If it's a super complicated website, like for example, you know, Amazon, right? There's so many categories and levels and concepts where, you know, if you don't really structure the information and you don't name and make those intuitive navigation paths between concepts to help people find stuff, then obviously it can get complicated. Actually, every time I hear the word taxonomy, I always think of Yahoo directories. You know, you probably remember old Yahoo page where you would go and you would, you would have the option to search for stuff, but then you would also have the option of drilling into existing directories and, you know, potentially finding what you're looking for under there. So in this case, I would assume that would be a really good example for, you know, heavy taxonomy use, right?
Yeah, well, I was going to get offended because I'm kind of old, but I'm not that old to remember all the Yahoo page. But
no, I mean, yeah, I mean, I would assume it still exists. I don't know, I haven't gone there, but if I type yahoo.com, I don't know if they still have those directories or they got rid of them. I actually don't even know, but yeah, they've been there. Okay. All righty. Well, Oksana, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you think that we have missed in terms of gamification, or do you think that there's something, you know, a couple of other interesting things that you would like to share with everybody in terms of your gamification or UX in general experiences, maybe challenges or something like that? But I mean, basically, any last kind of taker questions or comments?
Well, I would strongly advise not to use gamification when you have this choice, because unless you know for sure what you are trying to accomplish with gamifying your software or anything that you're trying to gamify, you have to ask in the first place why are you doing that? What's the reason for you know, implementing that kind of costly thing that would cost you lots of money? Mm-hmm. And actually, it would be really nice to ask yourself, what's the point? Because sometimes you can just accomplish what you want in a easier way, you know. Sometimes there is a answer somewhere around, and you don't need to create a game around your software, you know, for that matter. I remember that sort of story. It's not related to anything that we talked about, but there was a guy, and he was really aiming to be a president of the club, you know, and to be on the top of that. And once he had an interview with other his peers, and he started asking him why he was, you know, going into this fierce competition and why he was trying to do that. And eventually, when he answered all the whys, you know, he came to the point where he said that, I just want to find my picture in newspapers, you know, that's the whole point of doing that. And they asked, maybe there is an easier way to get to the newspapers rather than being a president.
Right, right.
It all depends on the goal that you have. Probably the easiest way. So, yeah.
This is actually a really awesome point. And I think it applies to pretty much everything that people do in life. Whatever they do, especially when you come to meetings and people just argue fiercely over something, and then you're like, so why are we talking about it? What's the purpose? And I'm sure you heard that concept, you know, five whys, right? You know, ask why five times until, and you know, that somebody probably, you know, did some research or homework, so the number five is probably the average number of whys that would actually take you to the bottom of you know, what of why exactly you're doing something. In your case, you know, the why number five probably talked about that picture in the newspaper, right? And and actually, this reminds me of you know, we both know Jared Spool, right? I assume you follow him on Twitter. When he came to Minneapolis and gave a presentation, he had the slide. He also mentioned five whys, and he uses this the most interesting man on earth, you know, the guy from the commercial. he created the slide and said, you know, I don't always ask why, but when I do it five times. So, so that was really, really funny. I mean, the whole auditorium just had a blast laughing at that, but it was actually, you know, pretty deep. Okay. Well, Oksana, thank you so much. You are the very first guest on this podcast. It's been a privilege. So really, really thank you for doing that with me. And for everybody else, I mean, guys, this is my first episode. So, you know, please don't hesitate to tell me how bad I did so I can, you know, read your comments and learn and get better. So, all right, well, that should do it. Bye, everybody, and have a great day.